And what is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the University of Mobile Athletics Podcast. Today, I have one of the members. He's been here for a while. Not really a while. It's been maybe like two, three years. Yeah. But he actually recently, he just graduated as of December. He graduated with his bachelor's in creative writing and English, a double major. He's a senior forward from Mobile, Alabama. Number 20, Alan Lang. How are you, bro?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. How does it feel? You just graduated?
I'm old, man. It's crazy.
I mean, you're not really old. How old are you?
I'm 23.
I mean, I'm 25, so it could be worse.
Right.
You could be 25.
It's definitely a blessing. Graduating last semester with a major in creative writing and finishing up this semester with a major in English, just opening up a lot of doors. Because, like, my sixth year in college.
Yeah.
So, like,
that's okay.
COVID raised her ear. It's opening a lot of doors for me to continue my education and just, you know, see where life takes me.
Mm-hmm. And you graduated with an associate's degree in arts, correct?
Yes, sir.
And that was at a different university?
Yeah, it was at a junior college.
Okay. So, you're from Mobile, Alabama.
Yes, sir.
What high school did you go to?
I went to McGill for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So, I went my freshman and sophomore year. And then I went to Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And then finished half my sophomore year, junior and senior year, and then ended up going to Weber. And then yada, 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 came back, kind of came full circle.
Okay. Because I was wondering, because last year it said that you were from Salt Lake.
You did?
Yeah. Because I remember I introduced you at games, and you weren't from Mobile, Alabama. I think
really?
It was from, yeah. So.
I didn't even, like.
Yeah, so I didn't, I was confused by that, because when I saw that it said Mobile, Alabama, I didn't know what high school you went to.
Yeah, no, for sure. Wow. I went to McGill for a year and a half. I played there, and then I ended up, my dad got a job with the Jazz, and then I moved out there and just finished out there.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk about your dad at some point in this episode, but right now we're just focusing on you. This is your last year, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you finally came back. You had a ACL tear last year.
ACL and lateral meniscus tear, and it was a long recovery, but back and trying to get back in to motion, get everything back.
So. I got you. And where did, I guess, you know, every episode is the same. I go back and just talk about how you started. Where did the love of basketball come from? When did it start for you?
Honestly, when I grew up, I didn't want to play ball.
Really?
Yeah, because everybody around me was playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I want to be a little different.
Yeah, exactly.
This at the third. But it was kind of like something that I just did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't anything that was like any pressure from my people, any pressure from my family.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something for me that was like everybody around was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just hopped in.
Yeah.
You know, and then sooner or later, it was like, okay, like, I like this. This is something that I can actually say, like, I want to do long term.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably started in, like, elementary school, really, probably, like, third grade.
Mm-hmm.
I really started wanting to play because before that, I didn't really even want to be on a team.
Yeah.
I just would go in the gym, play around because my first sport was baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my brother, we would play baseball, do all these different things. Play travel ball down here at Matthews Park, and then, you know, we'd be in the basketball gym playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And then sooner or later, like, my dad would be working out, my uncles, everybody around me would be working out, and it was just like, well, let me see what I can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it just turned into this, and I think it was a good decision. It was definitely a blessing, so.
Mm-hmm. And when did you, at what age did you realize that I want to play the next level? Like, after high school, I want to play college. And after that, who knows?
It was probably freshman year because my brother, I played on the same team as him.
Mm-hmm.
My freshman year, he was a senior. So we both played on varsity team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was getting these calls. He was going to AAU trips. He was doing all of these different things. And I was like, man, like, you know, it doesn't really occur to you in elementary school or middle school that, like, okay, this could pay for education. Like, even if you don't go play long term, you could still get a free education from it and doing something that you love. So kind of looking up to my brother and just seeing him just, like, grow and keep growing and keep having all these opportunities to go to these different places, different states.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, for me, I felt like that was something that I wanted to be. I wanted to be like him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. And originally, when you graduated high school, you wanted to, you went to a junior college?
No, out of high school, I went to Division I.
You went Division I?
Yeah.
What school was that?
Weber State University.
Weber State. Okay. And then it says that you you went to Bossier Parish?
Bossier Parish, yeah.
And is that a...
That's a junior college.
Okay, so you went Division I.
I went Division I, went junior college, then went NA. Okay.
So how many offers did you have coming out of high school?
I didn't have too many, honestly. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of, I had anywhere from NAIA to, like, low major Division I.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was is my high school coach, my senior year, actually used to coach at Weber.
Okay.
And he... When I was trying to figure out where I was going to go, I had Alabama A&M call me a few times. Mm-hmm. And it was like, do I want to go back home?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Do I want to go back to the state of Alabama?
Yeah.
Whatever. So my high school coach, he pretty much was like, well, I know you could go to Weber.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, it just worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 45 minutes from home, from Salt Lake, where home was.
Mm-hmm.
I went up there on my visit, played well, and Coach Ray, he recently retired last year. He was a legendary coach, like amazing person. And he just told me, like, yeah, like, you're young. I was the youngest on the team for 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, so he's like, you're young. Like, you'll have an opportunity if you just come in and work hard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I really needed to hear. Yeah, like, the level was, it was mid-major. Like, you know, a year before I came there, a year and a half before I came there, they made the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, well, you know, if I can be a part of this, if I can be a part of something big, then by all means, I'll come on. So I came on there, and that was definitely a different level. Like,
mm-hmm.
my first year out, I knew what was going on, but I didn't expect what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I redshirted my first year. Second year I came on, I appeared in like 4 or 5 games, and it was just like, well, I wanted more, you know, so decided to go to junior college and ended up COVID, all that stuff. So,
Yeah. And so after you got your associate's degree, what led you to the University of Mobile?
Oh, that's a crazy story. I like I said, like, out of high school, I didn't want to come back home.
Yeah.
That wasn't like my first thought to come back home, but. It all aligned. Coach Ellis was calling me from probably January to the end of the season.
Really?
So in junior college, it was the conference that we were in was the top three conference in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So we had like Mississippi State, we had Grambling, we had a lot of guys go to like Oregon State, even Georgia. Like, we had a lot of guys that were high major guys in our conference that we had to play against every night.
Yeah.
So out of junior college, I had calls or offers.
Yeah.
So I had University of Texas Arlington, Austin Peay, and UT Rio Grande Valley, and they were in contact with me pretty much constantly the whole time I was in junior college. UNO came in at the last, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end.
Mm.
But like, all these schools would come in, contact me.
Yeah.
So when it came down to it, it was kind of UTA, Austin Peay, and UNO.
Mm-hmm.
So because it was a COVID year, I had already graduated pretty much by the time I got to junior college.
Mm-hmm.
Because I already did 2 years.
Yeah.
So I sent my transcripts out. And they're like, well, you're 3 credit hours short. You could take a summer class, but it's COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no summer classes.
Exactly.
So it was like, well, you could come here, but you'd have to sit out. And it's like,
No. Yeah.
So Coach Ellis was calling me. And he's like, and I'm telling him, I'm like, Coach, if this happens, I'm going to go there before I come here. You know, long story short, these things fell through, and it was meant to be for me to come back.
Mm-hmm.
you know, like I look back and think about it, like, dang, like coming back home, like, mm-hmm. but it was meant to be for me to be back here around my family, give my grandparents, my aunties, my uncles a chance to see me play.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good environment for me to come back.
Yeah, sure. And it's usually like that when it comes to people that want to leave Alabama.
Yeah, you always
come back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's a blessing and a curse because a lot of people like to stay in Alabama.
Right.
And I'm sure everybody's like that, like throughout the world. They try to get out of their hometown, and it just keeps calling them back.
Right.
But you managed to come back, and you played for a year.
Right.
How was that first experience coming in?
It was. The first semester, you know, you kind of get thrown into a new team.
Mm-hmm.
I was honestly, because I don't like comparing the two. Yeah. I don't like comparing Weber or junior college to here. But mm-hmm. I was kind of confused because it was like, well, I was at Weber for 2 years and it's like everything was in complete order.
Yeah.
Like we had summer, we had workouts, we had everything in order. You knew exactly what you were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that wasn't the case here, but it was like, you know, Coach Archie, it was his second year, I want to say, taking over, rebuild, establishing the culture,
mm-hmm.
and just being a part of that. It was I don't want to say it was harder.
It's just different.
It was just different.
Yeah.
It was different because I'm coming from places that the culture was already established.
Mm-hmm.
The coach was there for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Junior college, the coach was there for 5.
Mm.
I'm coming in, new situation, new coach, just trying to get my feet wet. But by January, when January came around, it was like, okay, I got it. I know exactly where I fit in here,
mm-hmm.
exactly how I need to move, exactly how I can play, exactly how I can benefit everybody around me in the program.
Mm-hmm.
That first year, it was definitely, I don't want to say it was hard. Well, every year is hard, but it was definitely an adjustment.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was an adjustment for sure.
And how was it like coming into a different culture? How are you able to adapt to a different culture? Because you did it 3 times.
Did it 4.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, growing up, I was blessed enough. My father played overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, I was exposed to just so many different cultures. Spending time in Japan, spending time in the Philippines.
Mm.
I was over there for about 13 years. So just kind of being exposed to that culture, coming back here, moving to Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
That's a completely different culture. Moving back down to Louisiana, mm-hmm. Right outside of Dallas, that's a different culture. Then coming back home, I feel like just acceptance, just kind of wanting to immerse yourself into any situation that you can be a part of. And mm-hmm. for me, it was like, okay, well, if this is what it is, if this is the culture in Japan, the Philippines, Salt Lake City, Louisiana, Alabama, like, just experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Just welcome it with open arms. And that's really, for me, that was, it's odd, it's weird, because you're doing things that you're not used to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But once you kind of understand, like, okay, this is where they come from, this is where you come from, this is what they've experienced, and just learning how to accept that and just accept that you can learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can learn and you can grow and all of these different things. It's weird at first, but then it's something that's satisfying, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in the end, with all the cultures that you've experienced, it really just helps you identify who you are.
Right, yeah. Right. And you identify, like, how the stories connect.
Mm-hmm.
You may be from wherever. I'm from Mobile, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're from Salt Lake City versus you're from Nagoya, Japan. It's like, we still have that same story. We can still connect and we can still understand each other completely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those cultures, if I experience your culture and you experience my culture, then we can understand each other more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I get that. And so after your first year, You came in. I think R.J. Kelly came in as well.
Yeah, yeah,
he's playing overseas currently.
Yeah.
And there was another player. I think there was Gary was out.
Gary was injured.
Yeah, he was injured. I think there was somebody else that came in that year that was only in there for a year. I could be wrong.
Javen Humphrey?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. How was it coming back home? And then, because R.J.'s not from here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How was it connecting with them as a new team?
it's always hard to, you know, it's always hard to establish chemistry with the team.
Mm-hmm.
But you always have, like, you have preseason, you have Toughness Fridays, you mm-hmm. have the running with ropes, you have all these yes. different things, all these different times to go through adversity and just establish that chemistry together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously it's hard. It's a little different. You have different personalities. You have people from different backgrounds. You have different, all these different things.
Yeah.
But when it came down to it, once we started clicking in January, it was like, okay, RJ's going to play as hard as he possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If he, you know, we all mess up, but it's like, you know what? I can never say anything to anybody if they're playing hard.
Mm-hmm.
So even Hump, like, Hump's going to play hard. Hump's going to score the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Hump's going to try on defense. I will never say anything about them
mm-hmm.
because they're playing hard. They're trying to do their job. And it's like nobody on the basketball court ever wants to mess up.
Yes.
We don't ever want to mess up. Mm-hmm. But it's like it's part of the game.
Yeah.
You're going to mess up. So mm-hmm. it's like just understanding like their play style, their personalities, and finding ways to connect to them, speak to them, be positive, or tell them something that they would like to hear or need to hear
mm-hmm.
to uplift them so they can play their best.
Yes.
And that wasn't really the hard part. The mm-hmm. hard part is on the court.
Yes.
The hard part is like, okay, this is your spot. Here, take the ball, mm-hmm. score. It's basketball. You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
You're playing with different teammates, you're playing with different personalities, and it's like, okay, well, observe. You know, see how it works, and mm-hmm. then make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
And fast forward to your second year, you get injured.
Yep.
How was that whole year for you?
That year was a mental battle more than a physical battle.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, coming back, it's kind of the same thing. You know, I've had a knee injury before back in high school, and once I got the news that I tore my ACL and meniscus and all of that, it was like, dang, like, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta go back. But, you know, thankfully, like, we had a lot of trainers. I had a lot of people around me, family, friends, all these people around me to build me up and just help me overcome that adversity. Because, like I said, it's not, once your knee's fixed, it's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the doctor was telling me, and just trying to take it one day at a time, just embrace the grind. It's definitely a challenge
mm-hmm.
for sure.
And when you say it's a mental battle, like yeah. that's something you just got to accept it. How long was it for you to like accept it and just understand that it's a process? Cause I know it, you want to be out on the court.
Oh, for sure.
So
first of all, when they told me I tore my ACL, I hung up on the doctor. the nurse is like, yeah, the MRI came back and you tore it. No, I didn't. Click, hang up.
Yeah.
But it was really when I tore it, the next, I was walking and able to get on elliptical. I was able to bike. I was able to single leg squat on it
mm-hmm.
within like 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not thinking it's torn. I'm not thinking it's torn, but then you get that news that it's torn, you get a second opinion, and then, you know, you have about 6 weeks to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Prepare yourself, get your body as strong as possible
mm-hmm.
to go have the surgery. It's like, if you can get through the first month after that recovery,
mm-hmm.
you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you can stay in high spirits that first month because you're laid up,
mm-hmm.
you know, after ACL surgery, they normally tell you 3 days later, you're in PT,
mm-hmm.
Getting that range of motion back, trying to get on a bike, all of those different things. That first month is torture.
Mm.
Like, so the ladies are sitting there bending your leg back and forth. Like, it is torture. It's the craziest thing. But once, after, like, I excelled in PT, and the doctor just slowed me down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because you're trying to do too much, all of these different things. It's one of those things. It's like you feel good one day, you go out and do something,
mm-hmm.
and then your body reacts to it because this is a whole new leg, pretty much. This leg hasn't done anything. This leg hasn't done that.
Yeah.
So that mental battle of like, well, I can do this, mm-hmm. but the doctor's telling me no.
Mm.
Like, yeah. what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I'm cleared to do this, but I'm not cleared to do that. Well, it's the same motion.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I do this? So it's like that mental battle of just staying in it, just having to keep all the negative thoughts away and just like understanding what your purpose is, what your goal is, and how to just do it every single day.
Mm-hmm.
It's mundane, just doing it every day.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And now you're finally, you cleared like what, 2-3 weeks ago? A month ago?
I got cleared the first game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a year later pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Because like in the summer, I had to go out of town to get physical therapy from them and then come back in, have to work with the insurance, have to work whether or not I need a brace, have to go back and forth, do all these tests and mm-hmm. make sure everything was right. Once I got cleared, it was pretty much November.
Yeah.
And I missed all the preseason, all of these different things, and you kind of just get thrown in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously your body's just in shock.
Yeah.
And right now it's a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a month ago.
Yeah.
So right now, like, my body's just in shock. It's not, I haven't played in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those things, is like maintaining your confidence, maintaining that confidence in that leg, maintaining the confidence in the work that you have put in to get here, the work that you have put in to get healthy, the work that you have put in to even be in this situation to play.
Mm-hmm.
And just trusting that over and over and over again. And that in itself is a mental battle. You
yes.
know, like it's all a mental battle because your body's trying to adjust to it.
Mm-hmm.
And just having to keep doing it every single day and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a blessing to be out there at not necessarily, I want to say full capacity, but at some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blessing to be out there and just to really try to feel like my old self, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, and I wouldn't know because I've never had an injury like that. But a lot of people would look at it like it's not starting over from square one. It's more of like a restart and trying to juggle that in their mind.
It's a reset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, you know, people are like, you're not the same after the ACL injury.
Mm-hmm.
No, you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this leg is stronger than it was, actually.
Yeah.
It's just your body's not used to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a reset because you're hurting in places that you ain't hurt before.
Mm.
You're trying to figure out, okay, how can I take care of my body enough to get on this court?
Yeah.
How can I, you know, because you have to do things that you're not used to doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily a restart per se because the talent's there, the work that you put in is there, your health is there if you took care of it, and all of that's still there.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to find different ways to pull it.
Yes.
To make sure that your body's maintained enough, make sure you maintain your health enough that you can still pull that out.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And what was your first initial thought going back on the court for the first time after the injury?
I was just having fun. Like that first practice, I was just having fun. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. That took a minute to get back in shape. It took like, I'm barely now getting back in shape.
Yeah.
But it was just fun to be back out there. Like I said, obviously I was shooting before. I was doing lateral slides. I was able to do some drills. But once I got cleared, I didn't have a half practice then mm-hmm. like sit for a week. It was like, you're full go.
Yeah.
So it was really a blessing to be back out there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I guess it's a good transition to talk about your dad because, I mean, most athletes here, we have the trainers here and then they go to the local. But you, when you got your surgery, you flew because your dad is the assistant coach for the Cavs, correct?
Right, right.
And so you flew all the way out there to get your surgery.
So actually, I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got the MRI results, like I said, I had to get a second opinion. I didn't believe it. So I sent it to my dad's doctors.
Yeah.
And Dr. Cope down here was pretty much the best doctor in our area.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad's doctors told him and told me, we all had a meeting, and they're like, you just stay down here.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed down there, down here, and I did my surgery. And then in the summer, I had, since my dad coached with the Jazz.
Yeah.
In Utah, I had a trainer out there. I had a PT out there. I had, like, a treatment center out there. And I just, I packed my stuff up. It was like, I'm driving all the way up there. So I drove up there, spent some time up there. I spent about 2 months up there. And it was such a positive just experience, just trying to get back into everything and the people I was around. It was a great experience to do that.
Yeah. And is your brother, your older brother, is he playing overseas?
My brother played in Germany last year.
Okay. Yeah. And right, like, the fact that you guys have so much, like, parts in the basketball world. You got your dad coaching in the NBA, and then you have your brother overseas.
Yeah.
What is it, what do you see in your future as far as basketball?
I'm just trying to see where it's going to take me. Before I got hurt, I had a coach that coached me at Weber. Mm-hmm. He was coaching in Slovenia.
Okay.
And he called me and was like, well, you know, we could sign you. Like, you know, I'm really close with him. He helped me with my recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coaching in Slovenia. He was coaching in Slovenia. And he offered me a deal to go over there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I didn't finish school yet. So come back, get hurt. Mm-hmm. And then he's in Germany now.
Okay.
I talked to him in the summer. And that's an opportunity. It's always an opportunity to go overseas, God willing.
Mm-hmm.
But just got to see where it takes you, because it could take you all these different places. You can experience so many different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
But just have to see where it takes me, mm-hmm. honestly.
And would you think that your dad is, like, hard on you and your brother when it comes to basketball because of, like, just his experience and that just...
He speaks resume. Like a coach.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he speaks like a coach. But he was never, he never wanted to be the parent that was just overbearing all the way. But, you know, you talk to him about some things and it's like, Dad, I'm not trying to hear coach. I'm not trying to hear coach tone. Like,
yeah.
But he was always positive. He is always positive.
Mm-hmm.
But as a child, like, he wasn't, never pressured us to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he went to multiple different places, was in multiple different countries, and it's taken him a lot of places, but he never really forced us to do anything that if we didn't feel like we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But once we were in it, he was like, okay, I've seen how this works. This is a formula. Like, I'm going to try to set you on the best path possible for your career and where you want to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got you. And so now that you've graduated, you just graduated. Right now, what is the goal for you as of right now?
I just need to take care of my body, finish the season out, and just see what doors are open for me. My goal is definitely to see as far as we can go as a team. Hopefully we get to the tournament. Hopefully we win a national championship. That would be a blessing. That would be big. My personal goal is to make sure that I'm healthy, keep maintaining my body, keep just taking one day at a time, taking it in stride, just trying to maintain everything, all the work that I've put in, just trying to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, career-wise, you know, got my resume, my portfolio together. Because I am done with school, I might as well. If I don't have an opportunity to play overseas, which I'm praying that I do, if I don't have an opportunity to play overseas, then I put my resume, my portfolio, my cover letter together, and I'm trying to send it out to as many people as I can, so by the time the season's over with, I have these options that I can put on the table and weigh and say, okay, is this the best option for me? Is this where I'm going to be the happiest? And just kind of navigate and go from there. So now that I'm graduating, that's the main focus.
Mm-hmm. And you, so does your family reside in Cleveland or?
Yeah,
you have family here though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So originally my family's from here.
Mm-hmm.
My mom, my dad, both sides of the family are from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we traveled back and forth overseas. My dad got the job in Utah. So my brother was in college at the time. So me, my mom and my dad moved to Utah. And then once he got the job with Cleveland, my brother, my niece, my dad and my mom stay in Cleveland. But my mom does real estate down here.
Okay.
So everybody's like back and forth, like you. Trying to, you know.
I'm just trying to see where you're going to reside.
Temporarily,
you know what I'm saying?
Temporarily, yeah. Temporarily, so, it may be Cleveland, it may not. I mean, I don't know.
I get that. So let's transition. Who is like your number one, the number one NBA player or professional basketball player that you envy, that you try to compare, will actually just try to match their style, or you say you play like them?
Play like?
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough.
Who do you envy? Who's your NBA? Who's the greatest for you?
The greatest of all time?
Yeah, let's have that discussion. Let's have that discussion too. We can talk about that as well.
The greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the greatest of all time, like all around basketball player.
Yes.
Does everything. Assists, scoring the ball, rebounding, all of that. To me, it's LeBron.
Okay.
All around.
Yeah.
The greatest scorer, I mean, you have that conversation, but the greatest basketball player all around that, you know, does everything at a high level, may not be the greatest scorer, may not be the greatest rebounder, but all around, it's LeBron to me.
And who do you like admire enough that you would want to match your style? When you growing up and you were playing, you like, I want to play like this player.
If Anthony Davis didn't get hurt, it would be Anthony Davis because 6'10", 6'11". I mean, I was blessed enough to see him in Utah when he was playing with the Pelicans.
Really?
He had like 42.
Mm.
He had 42 points. Mm-hmm. He probably missed 4 shots. And it was one of the most impressive, like, just performances. He just, it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely if I could, you know, growing up, that's somebody that you kind of look at and like, if I get 6'10", 6'11", then like maybe. But obviously when I was a kid, he wasn't in the league.
Yeah.
You know, he was in college.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of grow up, everybody grew up idolizing Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
But I didn't know I was going to be 6'8", 6'9". Like, yeah, like exactly. You can't be a 6'8", 6'9", Derrick Rose. You're a Hall of Famer.
I mean, you can.
You're a Hall of Famer, though. Yeah. But, that's kind of who I looked up growing up. I had a poster of Derrick Rose in my locker. Like, so.
And you're 6'8", 6'9".
Yeah.
What's your wingspan? Is it the same or is it?
It's longer. It's about 6'10", 6'11".
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Anthony Davis is the same, right? He's 6'10", 6'11", with like a 7.
7, like 7'2", 7'3".
Yeah. So same frame.
Just a little shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're saying short, like 6'8", or 6'9", is short. It's not. It's above average.
Yeah, it's above average. It's above average, yeah.
So who's your favorite team right now?
I can't even. I don't really have a favorite team, to be honest. In NBA, I just watch. I just like watching. I like players. I don't really necessarily go for a specific team. You know, that's not the right answer.
Okay.
It's definitely not the right answer because my dad's a coach. I have to be like, Cavs. Yeah, Cavs are my favorite team. Yada, yada, yada. But I, like, being able to watch them, watch them play, it's like I can't really pick a team because each team has something about them that makes them special. Each player has something about them that makes them special.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't want to pit anybody against each other. I don't want to, like, I can appreciate it, you know, and just, like, just watch it.
Okay. So you don't have a favorite team.
No.
But who do you think is going to make the finals this year?
I have no idea. Like, you know, last year you could say, yeah. But I have no idea. Mm-hmm. It's a long season.
That's true.
A lot of people are comparing
the win-loss right now, and it's just not even halfway.
There's no reason to.
Exactly.
But I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I got you. So I guess since we're going back to just you,
yeah.
What advice, first of all, let's talk about your experience here at UM.
Okay.
What is the pros? What have you gotten during your time here at University of Mobile?
What I've gotten from it is really just the community,
mm-hmm.
The community aspect of it, because, you know, you go to a university and or a bigger university,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have a relationship with your professors.
Yeah.
You don't have a relationship with the community as much. It's like, yeah, you go to football games. Yeah. Like
mm-hmm.
hang out, whatever. But here it's like a tight knit community.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to go in the classroom and there may be like 10, 15 people in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
or go in my major professor's office and just sit down and talk to her.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that, because that was something that you don't really experience much. You kind of take it for granted,
mm-hmm.
but it's like something here that it's established. It's really ingrained, and every individual is like, we're part of the UM community.
Mm-hmm. And you, like, during your time here, you said that you made the dean's list 3 times, correct? 3 semesters?
I think so.
Well, I mean, that's what you said.
This semester I made the dean's list.
Okay.
Last semester I made the dean's list, mm-hmm. and I think a year before, I know I made the dean's list at junior college, and I think I did my first year too.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me look at my transcript.
But then you also said you're a presenter at the National Undergraduate Literature Conference.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was something that was completely out of my comfort zone.
Really?
I had a professor at Weber,
mm-hmm.
and I was actually an athletic training and psychology major.
Mm.
But during the season, I had to take Anatomy and Physiology 1.
Ooh.
It was during the season and it was online.
Oh, man.
So I'm in my, you know, I'm in my core English classes. I'm sitting there talking to her, you know, she's making us do, you know, all of these things. And like, I'm not taking it too, like, it's not like, okay, this is what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking anatomy and physiology and I'm trying my best to study.
Mm-hmm.
That it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen. And I mean, so my English professor, her name is Sarah Voss, she calls me in her office and she just looks at my paper and just kind of puts it down.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you need to change your major. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, she's like, can you see yourself doing athletic training if you can't get past anatomy and physiology?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, like, she's like, no, like, you're a good writer. She's like, you write very well, like, you articulate your speech, you articulate very well, and you, it's funny, I tricked up when I said articulate, but mm-hmm. you articulate yourself very well, and I think that you have a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sat down, I thought about it, and I'm like, you know what, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So I changed my major and I was writing these papers and we would meet every now and then. And she told me to write a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I want you to present at this conference. So I wrote a poem and I had to present at this conference.
Mm-hmm.
I got there and, you know, there's a pamphlet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the pamphlet. And I'm like, oh, my name is on the pamphlet. It mm-hmm. says a poem I'm writing. She's there. I panic. I'm like, can I not present my poem? And she's like, no, it's already printed. You have to present it. I was like, I can't present a poem from anybody else. And she's like, no, like, it's good. Just present it. So I went up there, I presented it, and it was a great experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next day I had to present a research paper I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, we had a banquet, we had a dinner, we got all of these different things. It was a new experience. It
mm-hmm.
was something that I never really saw myself doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I liked it. I really enjoyed it.
And you changed your major from athletic training to what?
To creative writing.
Creative writing.
Creative now, writing.
Originally, when you changed your major, were you like, when I changed my major, because I had the same issue. I took A&P here, and I had no idea what I wanted to do.
Right,
And I remember I was looking at communications, because that's what I got my undergrad in, and I was like, well, what am I going to do with that?
Right.
Was that the same thing with you when you changed it to creative writing, or were you just like, I could see the opportunities?
Well, I had that conversation with her,
mm-hmm.
and she just kind of sat me down and was like, well, you can do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, people need individuals, professionals that can write. People mm-hmm. need individuals, professionals that can speak, that can convey information. It's like, because your words are powerful.
Yes.
Like, your words are very, very powerful, and how you use them, how you use them on yourself, how you use them on other people, mm-hmm. that holds weight.
Mm-hmm.
You can uplift somebody, or you can be negative with somebody. You're just being able to speak well and being able to write and convey information. She's like, that opens so many fields, opens so many doors, that you can be in marketing, you can be in advertising, you can be in communications, you could be a paralegal,
mm-hmm.
you could do all of these different things just using your words.
Mm-hmm.
Like her, Ms. Voss, Professor Voss, she is writing a book.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I went up there to rehab, I asked her about the book,
mm-hmm.
and she let me work on it with her.
That's what I was going to bring up,
because
you said you helped research and edit on an upcoming book.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'm not going to ask you anything about that unless you want to talk about how that experience is or what the book's on. It's up to you. If not, we can keep going.
No, we can talk about it.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, it's called Letter Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, it's this new idea that she came up with, and she went to National Archives and found these letters of African-American women writing after the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
and before the Civil Rights Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt like at that time, in her history classes, that's an area of African-American history that's never studied.
Mm-hmm.
So to find these things, she went to find newspaper articles, she went to find letters, she went to find all these different things in the National Archives from that time period to revoice the story of these women
mm-hmm.
that were what they were experiencing, convict leasing, separation of families. And she puts together this book. It was a dissertation that we turned into a book.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to revoice this story of kind of like a voiceless era.
Yeah.
So we pieced it together, and it was just like, it's kind of just learning about the trickle down effect of what you see versus like what you see and where it comes from, where it stemmed from, how even these women writing letters, who are they writing to?
Mm-hmm.
What were they trying to get done, and how much weight it held for them to be. Pretty much, they're literate, but they weren't well educated. They weren't mm-hmm. well read.
Mm-hmm.
And them trying their best to tell their story and voice everything that's going on to them. And like, you have hope, you have empowerment, you have despair, you have all these different things that can be weaved together. That's like a universal story that these women were facing at that time. So just being a part of that was really eye-opening for me, and it helped me learn a lot of things more than anything. So that was an amazing experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when you changed your major to creative writing, was it, because when I changed my major to communications, I really enjoyed the classes.
Yeah.
Was it the same thing for you going into it? You just like, I really enjoy this, and I can see myself doing something with this.
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right.
I like the creative writing classes. Mm-hmm. I do not like the English class. Well, I like the English classes, but I'm not good at British lit. I'm not good at British lit. I don't do well with old English.
Mm-hmm.
Not very. I mean, I did good enough to make the Dean's List, but like, I'm not.
It
wasn't as compelling. I didn't connect to it as well as I would have liked. And that's not, like, my professors were great. You know, that was just me like trying to find a way to connect to it. Yeah. And I just struggled. The creative writing part, I love that because I was able to just throw something on there, just pretty much be as creative as I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Say exactly how I'm speaking, like I could write it down.
Yeah.
English was more research based, analytical based.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I enjoyed that, it was a complete shift between me being an English major at Weber
mm-hmm.
versus me being an English major here.
Mm-hmm.
Just the different types of things that we were learning about at Weber, and with my professor being a professor of African American history
mm-hmm.
versus being here,
mm-hmm.
You read more of the classics, you read more of like Dante's Inferno, all of these different things. And like I'd never been exposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely an adjustment for me to make.
Mm-hmm. And you said that your professor says your words have power.
Being able to
apply that. Are you able to, do you think that that helped you with communicating with your teammates when it came to basketball or just in general?
Most definitely, because me personally, I'd rather observe first. Mm-hmm. I'm not the type of person to just go out and, like, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
But just figuring out how to use your words. Obviously, you mess up.
Mm-hmm.
But figuring out what can I say in this situation that can benefit them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to speak. I want to speak life into my teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I want to speak life into myself. I want to speak life into anybody.
Mm.
Just finding a way to use your voice in a positive aspect and use your voice in a team aspect. That's pretty much one of the most important things, because at the end of the day, when we're done playing ball, I mean, you're going to remember, oh yeah, I had 30 here. Oh yeah, I had, but realistically, you're going to remember that we had to wake up at 7 a.m. and carry that rope and run in the sand mm-hmm. and do all of this stuff. But you know what? At the end of the day, we made it fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that experience. I cherished that moment, mm-hmm. you know? Just those are things that, as being a part of a team, you kind of have to enjoy that, because sooner or later, even if you don't enjoy it right now,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be appreciative of it in the future.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm. And so, this is probably the tail end of the episode now, where it's just basically all of the encouragement and like, what advice would you give to somebody like yourself? You had an injury
mm-hmm.
and you had to go through the gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
They took you through it, man. So like, what advice would you give to somebody that has that experience?
Yeah.
And they're about to go through surgery and all that.
Just stay consistent. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be hard.
Mm-hmm.
And once you go through it, it's the best thing I could say is it's gonna be hard. First of all, it's gonna be hard.
Yeah.
You're going to go through days where you're throwing your crutches down the steps and like just defeated.
Yeah.
But through those days, like, you always remember your faith, remember your family, remember why you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And just stay consistent in everything that you've been through. Stay consistent. Trust your work, because everything that they were telling me is you get what you put out of anything.
Mm-hmm.
If you put your best effort in and you still don't feel like yourself, just keep trying. I mean, you can't even be mad at, like, you're putting your best effort in and your efforts are going to be rewarded. Just trust your work.
Mm-hmm.
Stay consistent. Allow yourself to feel how you feel. Allow yourself to feel like that space of like that loss that you feel like you have. Allow it, but don't stay in it. That's my biggest advice for anybody that's going through anything, really, is allow yourself to feel exactly how you feel. Don't stay in it, and then find a way to be consistent and change and trust that work that you're going to put in and that work that you have been putting in to be in the situation that you're in.
Mm-hmm. That deserves an applause. That was nice. That was a good one. That was totally unscripted. You had that.
Yeah,
had that on lock. That was all from the dome. And so, with another piece of advice? What would you give advice to somebody that's trying to figure out what they want to do as far as major wise? Because you changed your major. Mm-hmm. You had the same issue. A&P was kicking your butt.
Oh my God.
You didn't know. I mean, you had a professor that really looked at you not as just another student, but just wanted to.
Not as another student, as another athlete.
Yeah.
She
poured into you.
Yeah, she poured into me, and I'm eternally grateful for her.
Mm-hmm.
Can't.
So what advice would you give to somebody that's in that situation that's just like, man, I can't pass A&P. What do I need to do?
Explore other options.
Mm-hmm.
Expand your horizons as much as possible. If somebody's talking to you about, say, somebody's a musician,
mm-hmm.
listen to them.
Mm.
Actually, like, hear their words, hear how they explain it, and look at the things you like to do.
Mm.
Look at the things you listen to. Look at the things that you're around. And really consider, like, if it wasn't about school, if it wasn't about money, if it wasn't about a job, if it wasn't about sports, would I do this just because I wanted to in my free time?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's about your happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, like, I'm going to be a business major, I'm going to make a yada, yada, yada. It's about, well, could you do that if it wasn't about that?
Mm.
You know? So I say, just look around, look at what you like to do, what you enjoy. Because if a lot of people go to school and, you know, a lot of the times people don't even use their majors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why not have a major in something that you genuinely enjoy if you're not going to use it? Because,
right.
I mean, like,
you're right.
Like,
you're right.
If you're, like, quote unquote, not going to use it, why not take classes that you enjoy, take classes that you can really take an interest in?
Mm-hmm.
Because in each class I've taken a million classes. Like, I've been in school for 15
years.
Yes. Like, but in each class I've taken, I can really think back and say, you know what, I learned something from this class that I can apply in every day of my life or in one aspect of my life, and not even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be what I say to someone thinking about changing your major. Look at what you like. Look at what you genuinely enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
And find a way to see how school fits in that.
Yeah. And a lot of people I remember when I wanted to do something with communications after I graduated.
Yeah.
And my friends were just like, I mean, you don't have to do something with your degree. And
yeah.
I said, yeah, but I want
to. You want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's just understanding that, you know, like you said, you make a really good point about how, you know, you want to do something, you want to major in something that you like.
You like.
So at least you get something out of it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, you want to major in communications. Like, okay, so if you were an athletic training major, it's going to be harder to be in a situation where you genuinely love your job or your career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing's impossible. You definitely could. But at the same time, it's like, why not major in communications because you like communications? And then have an upper hand and say, okay, I have a bachelor's degree in this. I have a degree in this. I've studied for this. I went to school for it. I prepared for it. Yeah, the studying was grueling. I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. But I want to sit here on this podcast and
yeah.
listen. Like, I want to do that. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's all worth it.
Yes.
So.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, first of all, that's a good answer, man. You on fire right now.
Appreciate that.
But the last one is, what has God been teaching you this season? What have you noticed that you've been going through stuff and God's just been giving you answers? And
patience.
Mm-hmm.
Patience. Everything in my life we want things now.
Yes.
We want things now. Like, coming off an injury, this mm-hmm. season especially, coming off an injury, it's like, okay, I stayed here the whole summer, I worked out, I did this, yada, yada, yada. Then I get hurt? What? Then it's like, okay, it's like a rebuild.
Mm.
A complete rebuild mentally, spiritually, physically. It's a complete rebuild, a complete reset. It's like, okay, yada, yada, yada. Like, we're going to do this. You have a plan set out for your rehab.
Mm-hmm.
You have a plan set out how you're going to get back on the court.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have a map to, like, mentally. You don't have a map to, like, okay, well, how am I going to think to myself and say, like, I trust this leg?
Mm-hmm.
Or how am I going to think to myself and say, or say to myself that, like, I'm going to be the same player? Or how am I going to do all those different things, like, spiritually, and just, you know, not losing your faith and being patient with the fact that you were put in this situation, in whatever situation, positive or negative, you're put in this situation for your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because God doesn't do anything by accident.
Mm.
For me, it's about understanding that, accepting that, and being patient to see his plan unfold in my life. And I think that that has been the biggest thing that I've really kind of started to realize and having to come to realize, even though it is hard, just being patient with myself, being patient with God, being patient with everything that's around me, and just understand that one step at a time, I can, you know, if I'm patient one step at a time, mm-hmm. it'll work out.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was,
you want to give me a three applause?
You're three for three, man. Man. Well, I really appreciate you being on, Alan.
Thank you.
Before I conclude, do you have any questions for me?
No, I do have questions for you. What made you communications?
Yeah. So during undergrad, I was part of Ram Corps, which was a brass and percussion group.
Right.
It kind of exposed me to just being on stage presence and speaking. And so it morphed into, I enjoyed sports, and then I started announcing. And so that kind of, it all just goes back into creativity.
So
with communications, I got my undergrad in media broadcasting, and I got my minor in psychology. And now I'm getting my master's in communications. So I look at it as an opportunity because, you know, you look at coaches, you look at all the people that work in athletics, and, you know, they don't go to school to become coaches. You know what I'm saying? They don't major in coaching.
Right.
They probably get a master's in that. But, like, for me, I want to do creative work for a team, an athletic department, preferably. And it kind of just all played out. And that's really the big thing, understanding. I just like you said, words is power. Your words have power. Yeah. And just dissecting how I communicate to others. And I've always been interested on, like, how to really get into somebody's, like, mindset.
How to speak,
how to get the answers that I got out of you in the podcast episodes and everything. And just learning from people. It's not about for content purposes. It's just about,
tell me your story.
Yeah. It's just, I just want to hear. I want to grow. I just want to understand. So that's pretty much that.
Yeah, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a communications major. Did mm-hmm. you have to take anthropology, linguistic anthropology?
I don't even know what that is, man. So no, I did not.
Origin of words. Nope. But you do Photoshop.
Yeah, I'm learning on that.
What made you do that?
When I bought my camera that I'm recording on, wanted to, one, understand photography, and then that got into videography. And then when I got into sports, I was like, yo, like, these people are making these graphics, and these are really nice graphics.
Right.
I was like, how can I do that?
How can you do that?
Really, all the stuff that I'm learning with creative work is through YouTube University.
Hey, it works, right.
So that's what's getting me into Photoshop. All of the Adobe stuff, Premiere Pro and Illustrator. I just designed my logo for my Shouts by Sean page. So it's just, that's what got me into Photoshop. It's just athletics, really.
Right.
Yes.
I had to learn Adobe Premiere Pro when I was working at the news station.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You like it?
The news station or
the Premiere Pro? Learned Premiere Pro.
It's fairly simple once you learn it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked it. Mm-hmm. I can't lie. But then that kind of, like, then I had a graphic design class and all these different things. Because growing up, I used to draw, I used to paint.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, then during the pandemic, I kind of had to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we really had. Like, we go play basketball outside, and then my dad paints and draws. And it was just like, okay, paint and draw.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually got the foundation to do it, like, on the computer.
Yeah.
So, like, it was kind of, like, I enjoy that, too. Like, learning how to put these graphics together and do all that stuff.
I think it was funny when you came into the office and you saw me on Photoshop. Well, you saw me on Canva. And you're like, bro, you're on Canva?
And
that was just because I was working with a company. I was working with a volleyball club, and that's what they used.
Right, right.
And so when it's like, when you want to design something on Photoshop, like you have to have an idea. And you got to figure out how exactly you want to get
wanna
it
do
just
it.
Like that. And it's not like a 10-second process.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? It's going to take forever. Like Photoshop, Blender, Lightroom, mm-hmm. even the photos. Like
exactly.
I have a camera too. So like taking photos and seeing a picture in your mind and thinking like, okay, if I put this in Lightroom, then how can I get it how I want it to be?
Exactly.
And that process is just trial and error at that point.
Exactly.
It's like nobody can even tell you.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah.
And so it's just that's what it is. It's just Photoshop and Illustrator. It's really just picking
trial
at your own
error.
Brain.
Yeah. Just diving deep. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But no, that was a good question. Do you have another one or are you good? Because, I mean, it's fine.
Psychology minor.
Yeah. What about it?
What do you want to do with that?
I kind of looked at it as it helped me with communications because, mm-hmm. once again, you know, I like to communicate. I just love the aspect of it. And psychology is kind of like, it's all about the brain and
And
so I like to apply. I say that like I understand what the definitions and all of that is. But I feel like what happened was I was a nursing major and I took all these psych classes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I changed my major, they were like, well, you already taken these psych classes and you need a minor for communications. You only need one more class and you finish your minor.
Right.
And so that's how I got my psych minor. But I'm very appreciative of the classes and all I learned through it because then it just helps understand how you interact. And, you know, just being cautious and being aware and just understanding that, you know, there's a mental battle in everybody's mind.
Everybody's
going through something. So it's just like understanding that. So I guess it gave me more of like a innocent approach to like communicating with others.
I was a psychology minor also, so
mm-hmm.
I already the human development, intro to psych,
mm-hmm.
child and family studies, like all of that. It was you don't really know that there's a term for everything that you've seen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like there's a term for everything. And it's like just kind of learning about that and learning how people interact with one another based off of these terms, these broad categories, and just figuring out how like that development, like the child and family studies and the
mm-hmm.
human development, that development determines your communication.
Yeah.
Your communication strategies, like what, you know?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, so it's helped because, I mean, a lot of people look at, you know, communications as just everybody has it. But, I mean, you know.
Effectively.
Yes. So there's skills in it. And, you know, I've come to realize that after I graduated with my undergrad.
Right.
But it's funny because when I took intro to psych my first semester of college, I almost failed that class. So
like, what did you get?
I think I got like a high, like a low B or something.
I got a 78. I failed it. I got a 78. I had to take it again and get a B.
Yeah.
And then I come down here and they're like, that's passing.
So
I had to take this class twice. Like,
And it was weird because it was my first semester. I had to meet with my professor. I was like, how can I pass your class?
Right.
And so just looking back and understanding I got a minor in psychology is pretty crazy.
See, mine was like, I was out of town mm-hmm. and I had a test and I didn't take the test because I was out of town.
Okay.
This is my first year in college. I'm not, you know, I'm thinking high school. First semester in college, I'm thinking like high school. Like, oh yeah, she's going to email me. It's like, nope.
Nope. Just gave you zero.
Yep. Zero. Yep. I was like, so I had to retake it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So learning experience,
mm-hmm.
definitely.
Yes. But yeah, I really appreciate those questions. Ladies and gentlemen, that's been another episode of the University of Mobile Athletic Podcast. Tune in next week as I get another athlete on, and we are out.